time for the Ian Furness Show.
You want me to turn it up?
Send your text to 49451 on Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Welcome in, Carter Volkswagen Studio. Carter Volkswagen, CarterVW.com. Ian Furness with you. Kevin Shockey, where might you be?
Hello, Ian. I'm in the Redbox producer's booth, and Redbox, you may have forgotten, has the newest movies fresh in the theater for under $2 a night. Head to the box or stream on demand.
I did not forget.
Oh, okay, good.
Proud
of you.
These are things I don't forget. All right, let's get to headlines, shall we?
Now, from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Headlines brought to you by Venue Kings, venuekings.com. Mariners beat the Astros last night. It's a good day for baseball when that happens, even though they tried to plunk Dylan Moore in the head. Actually, they succeeded in doing that. Kyle Seager had his 700th RBI as a Mariner. That's pretty cool. Trail's only like the legends in that regard. It's been here forever, though. They play again tonight at 6 o'clock. M's are kind of making it interesting. Hey, keep going.
I'm proud of you for even admitting it.
Nah, they're making it interesting. They're making, and I'll watch a little bit tonight and get mad, and probably won't watch again for another couple days and get mad. That's
remember, Ian, it's 162 game season. They're all
it's a 60 game season, Kev.
Shoot,
and everyone makes the playoffs, including the Oakland A's, who clinched a spot again last night. Sounders announced a new schedule. The final schedule of the season comes out. 9 more matches starting next week. We'll have those games for you here on KJR for the most part. Your WNBA team, the Seattle Storm, they and the Minnesota Lynx. They figured out their COVID nonsense. They got all their testing done. Everyone seems to be good, except for one exception. Nobody knows who that is. But they're going to play tonight at 6 o'clock in the WNBA playoffs. Let's see what else we got. NBA Western Conference Finals, Game 3 tonight. Lakers-Nuggets. We have that for us. What time's that game? 6 o'clock tip, right?
6 in the p.m., Ian, immediately followed by Sounders Weekly with Jackson Phelps.
Nuggets have to win that game. They're down 2-0.
Man, I thought they were going to win that last one.
Well, they probably should have, but a last second three by AD. Not good enough to get a first team vote from Maria Taylor. Don't complain about it, though. She deserves a vote. NHL Stanley Cup Finals. They continue tomorrow. Tomorrow. Tied one game apiece. Lightning coming up with a win last night, 3-2 over the Dallas Stars.
And those games are all at 1090.
How about that? We are all about hockey. Finally, Pete Carroll and two other coaches. It'll be three because Gruden's going to get fined, too.
Well, no, there were already three others.
Yeah. Gruden got fined as well because he admitted he didn't wear the mask well enough. Apparently, Belichick not having it over his mouth but having it around his neck is good enough. Nevertheless, they're all fined $100,000 each. Team's fined $250,000 because of, say it with me, optics. There you go. Those are headlines.
I mean, it's good to, we all agree to wear it. Well, we don't all. Many people agree wearing them is important and good.
Yeah.
I do wonder, why don't they just,
he's not in Safeway.
Why don't they have the coaches do the daily testing?
They do. Kev, that's the whole point.
But they're not under the exact same as the players,
though,
right?
No, they are all in the same category.
They
are all in the same category. You can't go in the locker room. You can't be on the first floor at the VMAC unless you have done a test every single bleeping day.
Like for
Russell Wilson doesn't have a mask on because he's undergone the protocol, the same protocol that Pete Carroll has undergone. It makes no sense. It's a dumb rule. And people know I'm not anti-mask guy. I wear it. You wear it. When I go to the restroom here in a break, guess what I'm going to do? To walk 30 feet and not see one person, I'm going to put a mask on because that's the rule. That's what we do here. And guess what? I haven't been tested every day. It's ridiculous. And they're trying to talk into a microphone with stupid white noise crowd playing behind them and trying to make sure they get the right playoff. I have done live shots with masks on. It's not easy. It's not simple. And you can easily, Kevin, putting on one right now.
So how do I sound right now?
You sound okay.
Basically the same?
Yeah, but you have no background noise.
And there's no stress, and actually I sound a lot better than I expected, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, no, you sound fine.
But yeah, I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I was under the...
Also have a dedicated mic to just you and me.
If they have different rules...
You don't have like multiple channels on your head. It's a little different deal.
I just don't get it.
It's optics, man. Listen, Pete, here's the dumb thing. This is what's really dumb. Well, Pete Carroll makes $10 million a year. It's still 100 grand, man. The team has to pay 250. And here's where it bothers me.
They made it big so that it would hurt. So this you shouldn't be saying, oh, it's just PD has that kind of money. Well, no, they want it to hurt.
Well, but here's the other problem. They're fining the team $250,000. Every NFL team's cutting people back.
Yeah.
So 250,000 is two jobs, right? I mean, if you want to look at it that way.
Oh, that's so brutal.
It's just dumb.
Two, at least.
Because I'm watching these guys last night. You've got enough to worry about as a head football coach. You've undergone this rigorous testing since day one, since before day one of training camp. Everybody out there is doing it. And, you know, I'll give you an example. The NBA and the NHL, some guys wear it, some guys don't. Coaching-wise, right?
Yeah.
Trainers always do, which, again, doesn't make any sense, but it looks good. But, you know, I think Adelman wore it a lot when he was coaching Houston. Doc sometimes did, sometimes didn't. I don't think Vogel wears
D'Antoni
it ever.
D'Antoni coaching Houston.
D'Antoni, yeah. Yeah, well, my God, I just went
Adelman.
Old, wait a second.
Old
man flashback.
Adelman's coaching again?
I don't think Vogel ever wears it, does he, for the Lakers? I don't ever see him. I don't think so.
I'm watching
John Cooper coach the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's never wearing one. I mean, it's just, anyway.
I don't know, Ian.
I'm done.
I know we didn't mean to start on that,
but it's just a very strange story. It's just a strange story, and it's one of those things like, yeah, we're punishing people. What we're trying to do is get people healthy. That doesn't change anything. That doesn't change anything.
I mean, they're trying to be leaders, and they're trying to show that the NFL thinks this is important and wants people to be doing
sure.
it as well. And I get all of that. It does just seem like if they were following different protocol than the players.
Right.
And
they're not.
And they were not taking as frequent or whatever, I would get it, but man,
Do you think they're behind closed doors in a meeting room when Russ is there with, you know, Russ and Gino and another coach? I guess there were rumors about Gino not being in the same room when they're coach. But anyway, I'm done.
Sorry.
It is what it is. Steve Palazzolo is going to join us from Pro Football Focus. He'll join us coming up at 1:20 today.
Time for some fireworks.
Seahawks fans are all upset. The rankings came out. The ratings came out for PFF, and Russell wasn't ranked as high as people wanted. Hey, they're 2-0. He's having a great season, but we'll find out why. I mean, that's why we have Steve on. One of the things we've tried to do with Steve that I've tried to do, I want to learn sometimes what the numbers mean as well. And for the most part, after he explains them, they make sense to me. For example, you know, when he's telling me how low-rated the Seahawks defensive line is, I said, hey, Benson Mayo had a sack and a tackle for loss last week. Yeah, well, he had 50 opportunities to get there. He could have 16 sacks at the end of the season and 700 rush attempts. Is that really good? I mean, you know, Hugh and I were talking about that on Monday in Hardcore Football, you know, the percentage of times to get home. And
yeah,
it just doesn't pencil out. You got to do better than 0.2%.
Although Pete did tell the state radio, the actual state radio, that he was proud that they almost got there three other times.
But that's Pete. I mean, he's the ultimate optimist, which, good. I'm glad he said that. I would expect him to say that. I think the rest of us think it's dumb that they weren't good enough. The pass rush is abysmal, and the pass defense is equally bad, and I'm not sure how much they correlate with each other. Is it one is worse because of the other or vice versa? I don't know. I tend to think that it starts with the pass rush, and it makes the pass defense look worse when you're having to cover guys forever, especially guys like Julian Edelman. They'll just find their way open. I mean, Julio, look who they face so far. Edelman, Julio, Ridley, Gage. I mean, dudes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they tried to kill N'Keal Harry, tried to kick him out of the game, but didn't work with Diggs. So, all right, so we'll check in with Steve. And then Gavin Dawson, hey, buddy, will join us from 105.3 The Fan in Dallas coming up at 2:20 today. He's on the Dallas Cowboys flagship station, hosts the afternoon drive there. And also, a long time, actually hosted the Jerry Jones show. They flipped him to afternoon drive, and so his promotion resulted in a demotion in terms of who he gets every week. Instead of getting Jerry, he gets Stephen Jones every week. Still pretty good, the fact that they get to talk to the guys in charge of their football organization. Pretty awesome.
Must be nice.
I don't know. Have no idea what it's about. So we'll do. We'll check in with Gavin and find out what's going on with the Dallas Cowboys this week as well. Just real quick, Pac-12 stuff. Maybe we'll spend some more time on this at 2:00. In fact, not maybe we will. The conversation that Canzano had with those guys today, I think it's really interesting what the Pac-12 is going to move ahead and do or try to do with the 7 games plus the 8 for the championship game, and you know they're going to come out on Thursday, and it's again. Things don't make sense in the world of things that don't make sense. So last Friday or Thursday, whenever they had it last week, they tabled it
right
until next Thursday, this coming Thursday, with the assumption that this coming Thursday they're probably going to move ahead. I'm not sure what changes between now and then, unless you're trying to massage Stanford or UCLA or some other school. It could be Wazoo. It could be Oregon. Who knows who it might be. And you're trying to massage somebody, but if you're going to come out on Thursday this week and say we're moving ahead, then so be it. there's a lot to get into with that. We didn't even get a chance yesterday to talk about the bonus structure and how just absolutely dirty and disgusting. If you thought Larry Scott was dirty and disgusting before, it's actually worse. And I'm with a lot of people. I think Wilner pointed this out the other day, and I would agree. That's on the university presidents. That's
100%.
That's on leadership in the conference. It's when someone abuses the power as he is right now, it's just wrong. It's just wrong on every level. It's just wrong. All right. So we'll do that. We'll spend some time at 2 o'clock talking college football. Big news. I didn't even mention it real fast. Pete Carroll confirmed what we knew yesterday, and that was that Irvin and Blair are out for the season. So tough breaks there. We'll talk more Seahawks and break it down with Gavin Dawson coming up 2:20. We come back. Steve Palazzolo joins us. Pro Football Focus. Oh, I know people are upset, so upset. Can't believe that he had Russell rated low. We'll find out why coming up next.
Did you miss anything on Puck and Slick? Not to worry. Listen on demand at sportsradiokjr.com/podcasts on the free iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to Ian Furness on your home for the 12th man in the NFL. Seattle's original diehard sports station. Sports Radio 950 KJR.
All right, we are back. Carter Volkswagen Studio, Carter Volkswagen, CarterVW.com. Oh, Kevin, people are upset. People are upset.
Would you say people are all up in their feelings? As soon as I saw the top three quarterbacks from last week, I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go.
I love it. It's good. That's why we have this gentleman on every Tuesday at 1:20. Steve Palazzolo from Pro Football Focus joins us. He's the host of the PFF NFL podcast, senior analyst for Pro Football Focus. Steve, my friend, how are you doing?
Great. Can't you guys just enjoy a win? Can't you just enjoy a win and Russell playing great and just enjoy it?
Yeah, I think we should, but, you know, you guys have a website that is easy to go after if things aren't agreeable, right? And
yeah.
So now it's funny, yesterday you guys had your quarterback grades posted and rankings posted, and, you know, Russell's leading the league in like six basic statistical categories, including passer rating and completion percentage, etc. And so people lost their collective mind, Steve. They lost their mind. Before I go into the rankings themselves, can you explain how you, and we'll go through this all year, but how do you grade quarterbacks? What goes into that?
Yeah, so we go through every single play, and from a throw standpoint, we essentially have like a rubric as far as what we expect and put a raw grade on it from -2 to +2. So a +2 is like Mahomes on Sunday, as close to a +2 as you can get on the run. Russell Wilson last year to Tyler Lockett, the best throws you've ever seen. -2 would be Drew Brees throwing it directly to a linebacker last night who we didn't see, something like that, or Tom Brady's pick six in week one, Cam Newton's pick six opportunity that he gave Quentin Dunbar twice. But, you know, and then everywhere in between, positive grades for moving the chains, throwing the ball beyond the sticks, moving the chains, +1s for, you know, big-time throws into tight windows. And then zero grades are more expected throws or your plays where maybe the receiver wins at the catch point on a pass that, you know, could have been broken up, something like a DK Metcalf deep touchdown.
All right, so let's go through the grades. You didn't have Russell as #1, #2, or #3. Why not?
I mean, it's not anything he did wrong. Overall, he was 4th in our overall grading. Jimmy Garoppolo had the highest grade. He kind of had a small sample size. I think if we were just looking at passing, I would eliminate him. But he was 14 of 16 with, you know, his one other completion that should have been probably another 40 yards that his receiver didn't haul in. He just didn't miss many throws, and he had two big-time throws. Aaron Rodgers had another spectacular game. He had 4 drops in there out of his chunk of incompletions, and he was just, again, dropping big-time throws in there. And Tom Brady was actually unreal, really good, despite pedestrian stats. He had 7 passes dropped, including 2, what I like to call big-time throws. Those are our highest-graded throws. 2 big-time throws in the end zone that were dropped, and, you know, 3 big-time throws total that were dropped. So Brady actually played awesome. He should have been 30 for 35 for probably about 350 and a couple more scores there. So, yeah, Wilson, again, played great. I think he had a little bit of help on the DK Metcalf bomb. I think, you know, David Moore is a great pass. Also, obviously had some help at the catch point there. He has a shallow cross that goes for an easy 20-yard touchdown. So Wilson played well. He did miss a few throws in there. I know not a lot, but he did miss a few more than even some of these other guys that were graded above him.
How do you have season stats that you can kind of share with us right now where they're at? Because this was 1 week.
Yeah, so for the season, he's number two. He's right behind Aaron Rodgers. I mean, if you watched, and again, I think from a perspective standpoint, I don't think many Seattle fans have seen every single throw Rodgers has made this year, but he is just out of his mind. And I know that the stats are in favor of Russell Wilson, but Rodgers too. Rodgers had, and he had like a 51-yard bomb right in stride dropped in week one. So he's playing at a ridiculous level, the most accurate quarterback in the league from a ball location standpoint. He's just not missing throws. So Rodgers is number one, and then Wilson's number two. So, and there's a decent margin between Rodgers and Wilson, and then Brady, who's actually number three, Brady, Goff, and Cam Newton, who's coming in at number five.
What, yeah, which still is amazing that he's there. Take a step back. With Russell's throw to the Greg Olsen, he doesn't get dinged for that in your mind, right?
No, that's not even what's taking him off the grade. I mean, so we have a second process that goes through the ball location and says, was it catchable? Yes. Was it a little bit back? Yes. It's not really dinging his grade, though. We do have context for that. It wasn't a great throw, but it absolutely should not have been a pick six. So that's not that is not necessarily what's hurting Wilson's grade. Here's how I would sum it up with Wilson. Through 2 weeks, we have a screen pass to Chris Carson for a touchdown. The other one to Chris Carson, I think, was just a check down. I got to check it again, Atlanta. He has the shallow cross to Freddie Swain for a touchdown. So Wilson's playing great, but I think the difference this year is he's getting help schematically. He's getting help from his playmakers. So in other words, his easy throws are turning into great statistical outcomes, meaning touchdowns or yards after the catch or whatever it is. Wilson averaged 10 yards per attempt on passes up to 9 yards on Sunday night. So that was by far the best in the league. Again, meaning the short stuff is turning into big gains. And from a quarterback production standpoint, we try to isolate the quarterback from the playmakers and the defense and the scheme. And I would say through two games, Wilson's playing incredible and he's getting help, poor defense or great playmakers or great play calling. And that's why his statistics are just off the charts.
And again, for Seahawk fans, it was 1 week. Overall, number two this year, right? I mean, it's not that hard.
Yeah.
We're just so we can take a step back, right? We can take a step off the ledge. He's the number two ranked quarterback in your mind right now.
Yeah, and I could talk about this for hours, especially quarterbacks. Here's the thing, right? When you see a stat line, whether you saw the game or not, it creates an emotional response in you. When you see 21 for 28 and 5 touchdowns and 1 interception, which I know wasn't him, right, you just feel like he must have been the best, right? But when you go play by play, there's so much, especially in small sample sizes, the statistics are dependent on so many other things. The quarterback's the biggest driver, but in small sample sizes, those stats are heavily influenced by everything else that's around the quarterback.
Steve Palazzolo joining us from Pro Football Focus, host of PFF NFL podcast, also senior analyst for Pro Football Focus as well. We'll get to Dallas. I always love getting your first thoughts on the Seahawks' next opponent this week, which will be Dallas in a second. But let's talk about a couple other situations with our friends, the Seattle Seahawks, right now, and that would be our good friends, the defensive line and defensive backfield. Let's start first with the defensive line because that's where they're having the most problems. It feels like right now, where are they as far as that? Like how poor is Seattle in that regard?
It's just bad. I mean, it's as bad as we said a few weeks ago before the season. It might be worse. Jamal Adams continues to be their best pass rusher, led the team with 4 pressures. That's a whole different story, trying to figure out how to deploy him. Yeah, it's a major issue. And I think, tons of credit to Cam Newton and how he played on Sunday night. But you saw the pockets that he had. And not just the pocket and the shape of the pocket, but the ability to then be able to step through and out of the pocket for Cam. I think all of that adds up to just a pass rush that just doesn't have guys who can get home. And I said before the season, it's going to be fascinating to see this team that's built from back to front and how much they rely on the pass, on coverage to kind of carry them. But the thing I said was if they rely on a 4-man rush, this might not work. And that's Seattle's nature. And it seems like they're only getting pressure when they start to use Jamal Adams as kind of a joker and all over the place and the delayed blitzes and some of the stuff that they've done. So I think it's a concern. You know, if you have quarterbacks sitting there for three and a half seconds, you know, guys are going to get open over time.
What the pass rush itself, I mean, is there anybody in Seattle's pass rush that shows any glimpse of anything positive?
No. I'm sorry.
I love
it. Not a history. There wasn't a history coming in. There's not O.J. Collier's outperforming what he did last year, I guess. You know, Bruce Irvin's hurt now. I mean, it's just it's a challenge. When you play this side, when you don't have the horses up front, you kind of have to play like the Ravens. I mentioned this before, too. Like, the Ravens blitz about 50% of the time, if not more. They run stunts and twists, and they're bringing safeties from all over. They're bringing linebackers from all over. They have to manufacture things. Seattle has shown some of that. Jamal Adams is, he's rushed 22 times over the last two games. They never do that with their safeties, but you can't do that every single time. So I think it's going to take some creativity to manufacture a little bit of pressure and just take a little pressure off of the secondary.
Steve, let's talk about that secondary as I'm kind of scrolling through. I'm going to look at you, see what we have ranked here on the site. By the way, you can do that at pff.com and sign up. Ooh, yeah, not good, not good, not good, not good. So I'm looking at 57, 66, 72, and 86. Those are the rankings for the Seahawks for primary defensive backs. That's not good, right?
Yeah, it's not good. You know, even, you know, Sunday night, Shaq Griffin, you know, below average grade. Jamal Adams, for everything that he does in and around the line of scrimmage, still ends up trying to cover Julian Edelman, which was a disaster, and he gave up 127 yards in coverage. So overall, his grade wasn't good. And then you've got, you know, Quentin Dunbar. He did grade well. He had the interception. Probably could have had two. We should have had two. We could have had a pick six on one of them at least. So. And you start to see how much you depend on the quarterback a little bit. Cam Newton just leaves two out routes inside, and Dunbar, you know, gets those opportunities. So if you're playing good quarterbacks, which they have, they played Cam, they played Matt Ryan, guys that are playing really well, you're going to get torched at times, even if you're really good. But, yeah, it's a little concerning right now with what's going on in the back end in Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, Dunbar is 57th overall this season, or is he 57th last week?
I'm looking at the game grades right now where we had a good great game grade with them. Let me see if I could pull up the season grades really quick.
I think it's 57th.
Do they make it anywhere?
Yeah, I think it's 57th for the year so far, which is like, oh, okay.
Can I just keep the caveat? It's so early on all this stuff. This is like at the end of 1 week of the baseball season and a guy's hitting 500 and you think, do you think this guy's a 500 hitter? Like, no, he's not going to hit 500.
Right.
Of course he, or maybe 2 weeks, right? So I get like the hottest radio hits first week and second week of the season. Everybody's like, why do you think this guy's the best? I'm like, I don't know. Two games happened. We'll see what happens.
Let's go Dak Prescott and the Dallas Cowboys. Dak, I think you've had having a decent season so far. Where's he look? And what, give us a little thoughts on Dak Prescott.
Yeah, Dak's looking good. He's number seven for us, as I'm talking about the rankings. He's number seven so far through two games. And I think what you saw from Dallas outside of just a crazy comeback against Atlanta, their offense starting to be what we thought they would be, which is Amari Cooper is just so tough to cover. CeeDee Lamb adds this middle of the field and after the catch weapon to a pretty good receiving core already. Michael Gallup, the other guy that was just outstanding last year. So three-headed monster at wide receiver. Dalton Schultz actually catching passes at tight end. Not a huge threat, but, you know, a nice possession guy from what we saw last week. And Dak's just throwing the ball accurately, making plays. The offensive line's putting him under pressure a lot more than he's used to, and he's handling it. And I think the concern for Dallas is you might as well do the Spider-Man emoji for this Dallas and Seattle game. It's like great quarterback play, great receiver play. What's happening in the secondary? That's the big question for Dallas. They're not looking good back there, so I'm expecting a shootout and just an awesome matchup with Wilson and Dak going head-to-head.
What kind of year is Ezekiel Elliott having in PFF eyes?
I mean, he's running the ball okay. He just putting the ball on the ground the other day like crazy. Dallas scored 40 points, and they gave up. They lost three fumbles and had a fake punt fail. Like, they should have scored 60. So Elliott's grade's getting crushed by his fumble grade, but he's still grading well. Like, he's still in our top 10 despite having two fumbles. So he's running the ball really well and actually creating a little bit more after contact and forcing missed tackles more than he ever has, and it's because the offensive line just hasn't been as dominant as they have been in past years.
Kevin, you got something for Steve?
Steve, You were watching the Cowboys game like all of us, I'm sure. Who gets the crap for whatever happened on that onside kick? I know this is totally out of the blue, but that onside kick was such a disaster on the decision to not try to recover it by Atlanta. Who gets graded down for that? Is there any way that that's quantified by PFF?
Yeah, I got to go check and see what our special teams guys did. We do grade every single special teams play and see. One of them has to jump on it. I called it the hypnotizer. Can we get that to catch on? The hypnotizer onside kick. They just sat there and stared at it. I blame the coaches, right? Like it's a preparation thing. And I think consistently in this league, you just see scenarios and situations come up, and you're like, that team coached well, that team not coached well. And I think some of that stuff just adds up in Atlanta. That was just they were not prepared there at all.
Do you have some sort of quantifier for coaching? Is that something that PFF does or is looking at possibly doing? Because it does seem like the Atlanta situation might not be so hot.
Yeah, we do, and it's more so. So at the head coaching level, we would say, you know, fourth down, going for it on fourth down, and stuff like what Mike McCarthy did, going for two. While down nine, that's a whole other hour of discussion. But that is the right move, and we saw that play out. Because if you need a 2-point conversion, you do it as soon as possible so that the game, so you know what you're chasing. That's why they got that onside kick opportunity. So there are things like that from a decision making standpoint that we definitely quantified. And then from like an offensive and defensive play caller standpoint, like you would probably look at Shoddy this year and say, hey, he's actually calling good plays because they're getting good results on what we would consider, say, expected throws from Russell Wilson. So generally, there's something coaching-wise, scheme-wise, or playmaker-wise that's in there. So we try to bake that in as far as play callers go. Are you getting more production out of your team than maybe, say, they're actually grading?
By the way, I should mention that that Chris Carson's your third-ranked running back in terms of receiving this season in the NFL. In terms of overall, I believe he's number four. So, you know, we're all mad about Russ Wilson. He's number two overall. Chris Carson is number four overall, I believe, for the season. So it's not like you guys are slighting Seattle, I don't think, by any chance, right?
Oh, man, it's too much effort to be biased against all 32 teams. We look at everything through the same eyes. There's too much. Buffalo fans hate us even worse because we don't give Josh Allen enough credit, but, you know, he'll come down to earth, so that'll all balance out. We have no biases here. We just see it. Call it the way we see it. Carson's been awesome in the past game.
And I love the fact that Carson's ranked where he is. I mean, the guy, just if you look at just raw numbers over the last 2 years, just the basic numbers, not the PFF numbers, the basic numbers, Chris Carson's a top five running back over the last 2 years combined, and each of the last 2 years in a single sense as well. He's a top five running back in terms of carries, yards per carry, attempts, yards overall. I mean, and so to see those numbers kind of sync up with PFF is pretty awesome. I mean, he hasn't had a huge year in terms of 100-yard rushing game, but he's been a huge impact on that Seahawks offense.
Yeah, and the thing about Carson, too, is he's been running behind an offensive line that's not great. And, again, it's what we're trying to do. I always say we're trying to find the truth in every play or the truth in performance. So when you do have high yards per carry or you are producing and you don't have great run blocking, you're probably going to get more credit. And that's kind of Chris Carson in a nutshell. If you're difficult to tackle as a running back, you're going to grade well for us. The Nick Chubbs of the world, Kareem Hunt, the two guys with the Browns. I mean, when you're difficult to tackle, Austin Eckler, and you're catching passes out of the backfield, you're going to grade well. And that's how Carson's playing the last couple of years, but especially this year when he had the passing game to it.
Final thing before I let you go, you graded all first-round draft picks this season. And yes, Seattle actually had a first-round draft pick this year. Jordan Brooks didn't get any pressure. He did have five attempts to rush the passer, didn't get there as well. He got a 64.5 grade. Quick thought on Jordan Brooks, the Seahawks' number one pick, who's probably going to see a lot more time now that Bruce Irvin's out for the year.
Yeah, I mean, just the 15 snaps total through the first two games. I think, you know, he's one of those guys that produced really well in the run game in college at Texas Tech, just flying around the field. He had some difficult assignments from a coverage standpoint there, but I think he's got coverage ability. So I think he'll bring a little bit of versatility. I'm not sure he's like that pure edge rush type of player. I still think we're looking at, you know, creativity when it comes to getting after the quarterback. But I think Brooks will be a solid run defender like he was at Texas Tech, and then we'll see what they ask of him in coverage. But I think it's the best linebacking core in the NFL, led by Bobby Wagner. And, of course, Brooks just adds to that.
You're the man. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Answering for your sins here in Seattle as well, Steve.
anytime. Send everybody my way. I'll take care of them.
I know. Tell us about the podcast and what you got going on there.
Yeah, we spend a lot of time on the PFF NFL podcast explaining the grades, explaining what everybody's upset about, explaining context. We have a lot of fun with that. We'll be previewing every game this Thursday and over at PFF.com. If you want to actually purchase the grades with PFF Elite, you can, because I promise, over time, there's nothing more consistent than our grades, more consistent than stats. Our context does matter.
It's only $40 for the year for grades, by the way. It's nothing. It's zero. I mean, just go subscribe right now. You want to complain, scream, and yell, go subscribe and read and actually study what they're doing, and you might understand it a little bit better. All right. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There you go. Steve Palazzolo with that. And, I mean, I'm still just navigating my way through the website. I think it's fascinating. It's fun. It's interesting. I love when what you see with what they do syncs up with your eyes. I mean, there's... I'm going to tell you right now, like for $40, if you just get the Edge, which is like kind of the bottom end, but it's the first subscription, you're going to just have so much content to go through. I mean, I do it for a living, and I spend an hour going through it and feel like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to spend another hour going through it. I mean, there's just a ton of content there, and it's fun.
And I'll say this. I think if you're a Seahawks fan, you should almost be encouraged that the offense is doing this well with Russell Wilson not being playing with his PFF grade not being out of this world.
Right.
Because that means, A, he can do even more if it's needed.
Yep.
And B, that the actual scheme is putting him in the position to do what he needs to do and not have to go crazy. That's the idea. Now they're scheming him into this great success, but using him more.
Great stuff from Steve. We'll take a break, come back. Don't forget, we're just about 55 minutes away from Fact or Fiction. Gavin Dawson joins us as well at 2:20 on 950 KJR.
Tune in tonight. It's the Lakers versus the Nuggets in Game 3 of the Western Conference Finals. Tip-off at 6, followed by Sounders Weekly on Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
Now back to Ian Furness on your home for the 12th man in the NFL, Seattle's original diehard sports station, Sports Radio 950 KJR.
The difference this year is he's getting help schematically. He's getting help from his playmakers. So in other words, his easy throws are turning into great statistical outcomes.
Steve Palazzolo joining us from Pro Football Focus just a few moments ago. If you're upset with Steve and you missed the interview, you can listen to it on the podcast, sportsradiokjr.com, the iHeartRadio app as well.
I recommend it. Mm-hmm. Please. I spend a lot of time doing it.
you do. I'm just tweeting something out here.
Oh, Ian's doing a tweet.
I just want to. We'll do it in a second. Just something for our something good today.
All right.
Yeah.
I like goodness.
Yeah. We'll talk college football top of the hour. Getting a little bit of the Pac-12. Just going back to Steve for a second. You know, it's interesting if you think back to Russ. You know, and what you saw, and then what he pointed out. Hey, how many Seahawks fans have watched every snap of Aaron Rodgers or another player? And he's ranked number 2 overall. Like, he's having a great season. He's ranked number 2 overall by PFF after 2 weeks. You know, in the game on Sunday, 5 touchdown passes jumps off the page at you, right? Well, Swain, yards after catch, you know, was part of it. I thought that, you know, he missed. You know, we didn't even talk about it yesterday. I forgot to get in with Hugh. He missed, but he got a little pressure, kind of threw off his back foot. That 3rd-and-1 play was just ridiculous.
The one that everyone's mad at him for?
Yeah. Not Russell, that they're mad at Pete for,
yeah.
For calling it.
Yeah.
You know, I listened to the opponent audio recap with those guys yesterday, with the New England guys, and Zolak was like, what the hell? Like, you know, make them use their timeout, take a run if you get stuffed. I mean, and I just, they won the game. But, Kevin, I wonder how big a deal that would have been. Because we were talking about it, watching it, getting ready for our postgame show, saying, wow, if they would have run, where, you know, how could that have changed the dynamics, what New England would have had to do? Because they would have probably taken a timeout there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And as it is, they were down to their last one as it was. I mean, and it's would have, could have, should have. We don't know. It's all hindsight's 20/20. And if he hits the pass, it's a great call, right? But boy, the risk reward there on 3rd-and-1 when clock management's huge. Like, huge. And asking Russ to make that throw and everything else with getting protection, I just thought it was odd. And it was, and probably emphasized more because of who you're going against.
Sure.
Clock management comes into place.
I think there, one, it felt to me like the ultimate trust in Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And two, we have often been frustrated by a lack of aggression from the Seahawks, right? I think that's I'm saying we, the royal we here, but
no,
I think
no,
a general
right.
frustration
yeah,
from
right.
many
yeah, yeah.
fans
yeah.
or people in the media is that they are so conservative. And it feels to me like I think he's almost wanting to establish watch out.
Time and place, though.
And I like it there. But see, yeah. the thing is, like, I saw that as like, okay, we can kind of make it a little tougher for them.
Right.
Or we can make it impossible.
Well,
and I like aggression and saying, all right, you know what? Yeah, all of the logic is I'm going to run it here, try to get the 1 yard. And
I didn't look to the next gen stats, but I'm sure that the percentage of that pass being completed is well below 50%.
Yeah, and I know that there's some some other statistical plays that said it was the worst coaching decision of the week for any NFL coach before last night.
Well,
so
has to be. Well, the only way you can make that not be subjective to say what you just said.
It's based on percentage chance yeah. of winning before the play and after the play.
Yeah, and so. Because, yeah, if he hits it, yeah, it's great. But even if he hits it, you're like, oh, like, I just, and I'm with you on the mindset of the aggression.
I like the aggression.
For the most part, but this is a team that has won a lot of games over the years by running out the clock.
Yeah.
And they have not just one, but they've got two running backs that can punish you in running out the clock in Hyde and Carson. I just think the one overriding thought I had is, if they would have lost the game, I think that would have been a huge topic of conversation.
There is no doubt about it, and it was a surprising decision, but I like the aggression.
Just want to shout out. You know, the Seahawks won't have fans. I'm guessing we won't see fans in the stands this year. I don't know. I know. Who's bringing them back?
Atlanta's bringing them back now. Teams are slowly rolling back in.
Maybe we will. You know what? I say that I can't make that. Kids are going back to school.
Ian, I think we will have some number of fans in the stands before the end of the year.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how that works because like it's hard. Well, kids are going back to school. Pierce County, Tacoma, Snoqualmie Valley's taught. There's a number. Issaquah. A lot of schools are talking about bringing kids back to school. So yeah, maybe perhaps. One of the things is we're not sure what. You know, what, if, when, how high school football will be played or look this year. But when you go into CenturyLink Field, anybody's ever been to CenturyLink Field, one of the best things I thought they did when they built that place. Every helmet for the high school teams in the state is displayed there in that main concourse right by the team store. I think it's just, to me, it's the coolest thing, especially kids that have played or now adults that have played. You can go back and say, there's my helmet in this stadium. It's awesome.
It's cool.
I just tweeted out the picture they did this on. So, in tradition of the high school football in the state of Washington, on the one side that shoots across behind the visitor's bench, they put the WIAA logo up there for high school football, and they basically have, I think, almost all the jerseys or close to all the jerseys of teams in the high school teams in the state displayed on the stands. That would have been an arduous task to get those and then to display them and put them out and then to bring them back down. A lot of effort went into that. Big shout out to the Seahawks for doing that. I think it's just flat out freaking awesome. So thank you to the Seahawks for doing that. I think that's cool. It doesn't make up for not playing. It doesn't take the sting away for the players not playing right now. But recognizing high school football in this state, the Hawks have always done a good job of that. I will tell you that I'll probably look straight at Chuck Arnold for that decision because that is very, very Chuck Arnold. That is very Chuck Arnold. They've got a couple other guys in their front office that are very in tune with high school football. So
that was really cool.
Big shout out to the Seahawks for that. That's my something good for today. We'll come back. Something not good is pretty much anything going on in the Pac-12 conference. We'll discuss next.
Wilson, deep drop, back to pass. Loads up, deep downfield for DK Metcalf. He's got it! Touchdown, Seattle!
Your home for the 12th man and the NFL.
Spinning into the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City.
Seattle Sports Radio 950.
Win on three, one, two, three.
KJR.